Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Scott Kushner is here. Let's call this the season one finale of Locked On Pelicans. I'm Brett Dawson.
Anthony Davis throws it down. Yes, you can see that coming.
AD,
good decision on the slam from behind. Anthony Davis. He's got 12. Beautiful setup and hammer time.
Run out by Green.
Going hard. Anthony Davis.
How about some Anthony Davis highlights to welcome you in? I'm Brett Dawson. I cover the Pelicans for the New Orleans Advocate. This is Locked On Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And as I said, kind of our season one finale. The podcast has only been going for a few weeks, but throughout the free agency period, there's been a whole lot going on. Been fairly easy to do a podcast pretty much every day of the week. And we're going to move away from that schedule. Starting next week, one a week for the offseason, for the month of August at least, and part of September. And then sometime closer to the start of training camp, we'll be back to the Monday through Friday schedule. So just taking a little bit of a hiatus where we'll just do one podcast a week. There might be two on any given week if there's a lot to talk about. But today, we're going to kind of wrap up all the stuff we've talked about to this point with Scott Kushner, who works with me at The Advocate. Just kind of look at the big picture of the offseason, look ahead a little bit to training camp, what we're expecting, what we're looking for, what storylines we're going to follow going into the season. Real good talk with Scott, which I did earlier today. Do want to apologize. This is a little later than the podcast normally is. I know some of you have become very accustomed to listening to it in the mornings. But Scott and I couldn't really get together until the morning, and then I had a doctor's appointment. I'm fine. Thanks for asking. And I just couldn't get it up until a little bit later in the day. So my apologies on that. Moving forward, we'll talk after we talk to Scott about what to look for, what days to look for the podcast, all that sort of stuff. Before we move on, that video I played the audio of at the very beginning, that's a YouTube video from a user named Down to Buck. I recommend that video. It's every dunk of Anthony Davis's season. And that actually the reason I played that video is because it comes up in the discussion with Scott. So let's get into that discussion with Scott after I make, for the last time for a little while, some announcements. You know, every day you hear these announcements, or maybe like most days you skip through them. I don't know. Hopefully you listen. I should put like a quiz in here. I should give away prizes right in this part of the podcast just so I know that you're listening. Maybe another day. Right now, though, I'm going to change it up. I'll tell you first about Locked On Saints. Make sure that you have checked out that show. Make sure you subscribe to it. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, Nick Underhill and Adam West. Those guys are great on the Saints. It's a daily podcast, tons of training camp updates, lots of news, information, insight about the Saints. You definitely want to make sure you're checking that out. Speaking of Nick Underhill and Joel Erickson, who will be on that show periodically and has been on already, those guys do a great job covering the Saints for The Advocate. And so I got to remind you to check out theadvocate.com, the best place to get Saints coverage. Also, I would humbly submit a pretty darn good place to read about the Pelicans as well. Coverage from me, from Scott Kushner, who you're about to hear from our columnist Rod Walker, who's at the Greenbrier right now with Nick. Joel will join shortly. So tons of great stuff at theadvocate.com. LSU coverage just about to get into high gear with football season just around the corner there. So make sure that you're checking that out. If you're not subscribed to this podcast, I don't understand you. Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher. We're going to be on Google Play soon. Maybe by the time you hear this, maybe not. We're on TuneIn. Make sure you're subscribed and go and leave us a review. Go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating and a review. I love that stuff. Just gets us a little bit more attention, gets us a few more listeners. That's something I definitely want. And if you have any sort of comment about the podcast, any kind of questions, or significantly, if you'd like to advertise, shoot me an email at lockedonpelicans@gmail.com. And now with that out of the way, let's talk to Scott Kushner. Pretty good discussion with Scott, a little bit of update about the All-Star game, bunch of stuff about the Pelicans offseason. I don't need to preview it anymore. Let's just dive into it. All right, so Scott Kushner is back with us three times now, I think. Is this your third podcast or your fourth?
This is my third. I'm, hitting that territory of I want to hit that six titles. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I want to get, I mean, this is my first three-peat, and then when we get in the season, I guess I'll get another one.
So you got to pass Kobe. and then get to...
That's all I care about, passing Kobe.
That's right. So the people will be excited. The people love when you come on. So that's exciting. It's good. I thought what we would do today mostly is just talk about Saints camp. Let's just talk Saints camp all this whole time.
No, that sounds good. I really am interested in who the punt gunners are.
Yeah, and which guys
lined up. Like, I want a grade really on each of the punt gunners and how the punt gunners performed.
Nick Underhill is doing that essentially on Twitter. So follow Nick Underhill, and you'll. Football camp is insane compared to basketball camp. Now, obviously, last year basketball camp was at the Greenbrier, and neither of us was there. But if we were, we wouldn't be able to see the degree of stuff that they see. And I don't know that we would tweet every single – it's just different. There aren't position battles in the same way. Football camp minutiae blows my mind.
It's totally different. And I love Nick Underhill, and I've never seen anyone do to the degree of what he is trying to do at football camp, which is basically charting 11-on-11, all 22 players – and knowing what every single guy is doing on every single play. It's unheard of, and it really is spectacular. And I imagine the super diehard Saints fan has got to be just absolutely in love with the coverage.
I'm going to start calling Nick All 22. That's just going to be his new nickname. All 22.
22 Underhill. That's his name, man.
Yep, yep.
It is remarkable, though. And I guess it's because I follow so many people in the New Orleans media, but it's like – when Von Bell intercepted Drew Brees on, I guess that was Thursday morning, I think there was like 50 tweets in a row about it, about the first play of the first day of training camp and like the second play of 7-on-7s. And it's an interception. I was like, oh my God, this is, you just routinely forget how incredibly overblown the coverage is. But at the same time, people love it and people really care about the Saints. And football is unique in that way of like being able to watch every single thing in training camp and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, it's great for people who are really, really into it. And I like football to a different extent than that. Like I'm cool with football, but I don't need all that in my life. But I have it on Twitter. I can deal with it because I like following those people. Whew, boy, it's a lot. It is a lot. But if you like it, follow Nick Underhill on Twitter and subscribe to Locked On Saints. So I don't want to talk about football camp anymore. What I really want to talk about is sort of the Pelicans' offseason, and not the offseason that we mean when we say, you know, the free agency offseason, the stuff that's happened. I want to kind of look ahead. But before we do that, you are very in tune with what's going on with the All-Star game. I talked to Tim Bontemps about kind of where it stands yesterday, and a lot of that was stuff that I know from you. So where do we stand right now with New Orleans and the All-Star game on Friday morning, knowing that it could change, like, today?
Yeah, it could really change in any instant. I think there is some good traction for New Orleans as far as its ability to get the game. The question is that there are obstacles, and I think they're fairly obvious just by looking at the schedule, which is the first weekend of Mardi Gras is right then, and there are some small conventions that are also in town earlier in the week, and a lot of those would need to get pushed out or pushed aside or refunded completely in order to get the All-Star game here, and that's a significant question for not only the city of New Orleans, but the NBA would have to absorb some of that cost as well. And I'm not certain if the NBA wants to absorb that kind of cost. And that'll be the ultimate decider of whether New Orleans gets the game. I think no matter who you talk to, it sounds like New Orleans coming out the gate was the favorite, and that probably because they worked on it early on and had laid the groundwork and know how to put the game on, more importantly. But, you know, there's still four cities in the running as far as I know. There is a significant draw for New Orleans. I believe all things being equal, New Orleans would get the game. It's just a matter of whether or not they can kind of hurdle those obstacles and actually get it here. And I would say, you know, given percentages, I would say there's a 75% chance it ends up in New Orleans, which is obviously great odds for where they are and considering how tight the timetable has been. But it's going to really be it's a tough circumstance for everyone to pull together, from the NBA down to the tourism people and down to the hotels and the operations of the SMG side.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this on the podcast before. One, the first day, kind of the guess that I had was that the reason New Orleans was being involved was being listed as the favorite was because they were good at covering the game and because the NBA thought we've got to do it someplace we know can handle it because this is hard. This is going to be a hard notice. And I've been told that's absolutely right. That's absolutely a huge part of the reason why they want to do it there, is because it's a proven commodity. And this is hard. This is typically a year-long process, and they're you know, contracting it well below a year. This is not an easy thing to plan.
No, it's there's a lot of moving pieces, and I think the average person thinks about All-Star Weekend and says, "Oh, it's a, you know, they've got the slam dunk thing on Saturday, and they got the game on Sunday." It's way more than that, because even beyond just the number of visitors, which it doesn't attract nearly the level of a Sugar Bowl or Super Bowl or anything like that, but what it does attract is a lot of business people and a lot of meeting space and a lot of high end type of accommodations for people, whether it be very large scale parties or very important meetings like owners meetings and things of that nature, that there's a lot that has to go into it that includes a lot of space. And then when you also include that fit jam session, which is, you know, essentially a couple miles of basketball BS that they put up.
And it's all weekend long. It's all weekend long.
You need volunteers from everywhere to help set that stuff up and run that stuff. I mean, it takes a horde of volunteers to get all this together, and that is not easy to turn around on a dime. I mean, it took years for them to get the Super Bowl all set up with just the amount of people that are involved to move spectators and visitors from place to place. So it is not an easy process. It is difficult to turn around, and the complication with the hotels is really the one that we've been told is the biggest obstacle. Hotels have always seemed to help out the city, though, when they need it. They understand that it's good for the brand of the city, which therefore is good for the brand of their hotel. But at the same time, you know, having to push people out, move space around is not an easy thing to do, and you really have to make a very convincing argument to everyone involved in order to do so.
Yeah, it was interesting when Dennis Lauscher was on the Black and Blue podcast, the sort of in-house podcast there for the Pelicans and the Saints. He was talking about, you know, when he was listing the people who are really playing a part right now, one of the first things he said was the hotel owners. That just how critical those people are. That's a really, really huge component of this that I think is probably a little underrated, because we know what the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation and the Convention and Visitors Bureau, we understand why they are so important, but the hotels thing is a huge, huge thing.
Yeah, and it's complicated to know exactly what the role is of the hotel owners and why it is difficult, but from what I've been told, it's normally the first weekend of Mardi Gras is around an 80-90% occupancy rate, which is strong. In any city, an 80-90% occupancy rate is strong. And they're fairly expensive rooms. And what you need to provide the NBA is a lot of comped rooms when they come. That's part of the deal, is that the NBA really doesn't pay for the stuff when they award you the game. I think, you know, if you ever read the proposal that Minnesota sent out when they got the Super Bowl in front of New Orleans a couple years ago, I mean, they were basically giving away whole hotels, and they had to like install the NFL network into the hotel room in order to get it. And all, I mean, like the list of demands from these cities, from the leagues to the cities when they award these things that generate so much money and tax revenue, they're significant. So you need the hotels to work alongside with the city and be able to pay for a rate that is more reasonable. I mean, the hotels aren't going to give it away. The city or the NBA itself has to pay for the rooms. So it's a complicated formula and process, and I'm not sure exactly what the holdup is, but I know it takes a lot of rooms and a lot of meeting space and a lot of upscale, you know, whether it be dining or parties or bars, whatever it might be. Everything has to be ready for the NBA to step in and host all this stuff, and it is a lot involved.
Yeah, it's a process, and I am learning a lot about this process the last couple of weeks, or the last week or so. I did not know much. You know, the All-Star Game is a big thing, but you don't know exactly just how big these events are and how much planning they take and all that stuff. It's been pretty interesting, honestly, just to hear, you know, what people tell you about the difficulties of it, the challenges of it.
Yeah, and which is why it's so important to have a city with experience,
right.
and like you said, that's the number one reason why New Orleans is positioned where it is right now.
Right. So let's talk a little bit of off season, and we've talked a lot about free agency, and we've talked a lot about as I told somebody the other day, you know, like, I never need to have another discussion on this podcast about, like, was that a good deal for Solomon Hill? Like, nobody cares anymore.
I'm sure you will over the next 4 years.
Yeah, yes. Yes, exactly. That's true. But I do kind of want to, you know, zoom out a little bit on the offseason at what they've done so far and look ahead a little at what's still to come, which is not much in August, frankly. I mean, that's the thing. That's why this podcast is moving off a daily schedule, because the NBA in August is the 1 month a year where it really basically shuts down. And while there'll be a schedule that comes out, there'll be some news eventually about the All-Star game. The news is essentially done for a while. So what I wanted to do is just take a little bit of a bigger picture look at what they've done this offseason and talk about some of the storylines as camp gets closer in September. So the way I wanted to start is, as this offseason has essentially wrapped up, what do you look at as their big move? What was their most impactful thing they did, or barring that, maybe just the most interesting thing to you that they did?
I believe letting Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon walk, even though we kind of sort of knew it was happening, I believe that really shows a significant change in direction for Dell Demps, which is someone who has built a reputation, fair or unfair, has built a reputation for overvaluing his own guys over the past 3 or 4 years. And the fact that he said, look, I know I brought these guys in here. I know that I, you know, awarded Eric Gordon a max contract. He was sort of pushed into it, but regardless, he built this team, and he built this team with a pretty, you know, firm understanding of what he wanted and all this kind of stuff. And he looked at the landscape as it stood and as the team played and said, this doesn't make sense anymore. I can't justify this and keep this roster together. Whereas last year, everything was about continuity and everything was about building together. And we have this roster that we know can grow into the right spot. He saw it this year and said, I need to shift directions, and that this team needs to shift the way it plays to feature Anthony Davis in a better light. And I think that is significant. And just his general philosophy, that is probably the most illuminating part of it. You know, obviously, Solomon Hill is an important piece. Etuan Moore is an important piece. These guys are going to be there for the next 3 or 4 years for sure as key cogs in this team. But the idea that Dell Demps allowed, he basically just put his hands up and said, you know, go ahead, like, we're not giving Ryan Anderson anywhere near $20 million. That, to me, spells a important pivot in his tenure in New Orleans and for this franchise.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I mean, to me, the biggest storyline is and the way you put it is a great way to put it, too, just letting those two guys go. To me, I thought the biggest storyline was replacing these offensive guys with these guys who are not at all the same kind of players. They are so dramatically different. It is a real shift in terms of what they're looking to do, because you replace two guys who average, you know, 15, 17 points a game, and when they're healthy can get you that, and they make a ton of threes, and they, you know, they can spread the floor, and they're just good offensive players. They're good scorers, let's say that. And you replace them with guys who are not high-level scorers. These guys, you know, If Solomon Hill doesn't average a career high in points, I'm going to be surprised, because his opportunity is going to be so much better.
Yes, that would be a real problem.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think he's only averaged 8 points a game is the most he's ever averaged. That was the year that Paul George was hurt, and he played a lot. And he's going to play more than that this year. He's going to have a lot more minutes, a lot more opportunity. But they didn't go out and add a scorer. They went out and added pieces who they think will make them better defensively, who I think allow them to do some things. I talked about this with Tim Bontemps. They will be able to do some things that Darren Erman has wanted to do that they could not do last year in terms of their ability to switch and change, you know, to switch all over the floor and switch on every possession if they need to, and look a little more like the defense that he's run in the past. I think they're going to be more similar to that. But they did that at the expense of offense. And I think what this does is it puts the trust in two things. Offensively, it puts trust in the Alvin Gentry system, which is to say, as we've talked about before, you and I, they did this with a D-League team at the end of the year last year, so they can score points. We are confident they will score. That's one thing you did. And it puts a ton of trust in Anthony Davis, and it says, we believe that you are the player that you were 2 years ago, and above and beyond that, we believe that you are a player who can elevate the people around you.
Yeah, I think that's important as an overall message of this team, which clearly he's the piece. I mean, they're all in on Anthony Davis. I don't think there's any bones about that, and there wasn't any before. But my question is, do you really think that they've improved that much defensively? I mean, I don't know enough about either of these guys, whether it be Moore and Hill. I mean, do you really think that this team is now in a position where suddenly they're going to be holding teams less than 100 points, or is this going to be more of a situation where they think they can just run more? I mean, where do you sort of see this stacking up?
I think it's interesting. I think they should contain the ball better, and boy, that is not saying much. I mean, they were just not good at it. Drew Holiday is good at it, and the rest of them are not. I mean, the rest of them last year were not good at it. They were just not good on the ball. So, and that, by the way, that includes Tim Frazier, who's not a great defensive player. I like Tim Frazier a lot, but he's not like a high-level point guard.
He's defender. A backup point guard also. Yeah, exactly. He's not shifting things one way or the other.
These other guys, I think, are going to be better defenders. I think they're going to be better defenders across the board. I don't think it automatically – I certainly wouldn't say, like, oh, they're a better team. They're a dramatically better team based on what they can do defensively. I do think they have a little more flexibility. I do think they'll be – Alvin Gentry has hinted so much at the idea that they're going to go small more, that Anthony Davis is going to be a little stronger and a little more ready to handle, you know, playing center, which they're going to do more of. That is the future of the league. It's the future of the franchise. I don't think Anthony Davis loves it, but I think the way that they're going to go, as long as they're playing under Alvin Gentry and playing his system, you're going to see his minutes at the five, I think, increasing. And that does give them a little bit of – I think it gives them some offensive flexibility as well. But I can't look at them and say definitively, I think they're better. I think they'll have a better record because I just don't think they can have the same kind of injury year that they had this past year. And I think whatever the case is with Tyreke Evans, I just think they're going to be healthier. And by the nature of that, by virtue of that, they're going to be better. but can I sit here and say, like, they definitively went out and made themselves a playoff team, or they're going to shave, you know, they're going to jump from 28th in the league in defense to 15th. No, I can't say that. If they do that, that's great, and they're in a much better position. But I can't say that I know enough about the guys that they've added or the way they'll play with those guys that's definitively going to happen. Can you?
No, I certainly can't. And I don't know enough about either of these guys. I mean, you watch tape and, you know, you kind of talk to people around the league, but that's as much as you can do. I have no idea how they'll mesh. I have no idea what they're going to do with that kind of minutes load, both Moore and Hill. And then obviously Galloway's going to have to play a good bit too. And, you know, can Drew Holiday stay healthy? And there's a lot. I mean, there's too many questions to really be able to say definitively about anything at this point, especially until we even see them take the floor together. But the other question I feel like is everyone had Dell Demps pinned, and everyone has Dell Demps pinned as this is the year. If they are not noticeably better and noticeably on the right path, then he is not going to last in New Orleans anymore. And that is, and that's not coming from really anybody inside the organization. They will never say that. But that is the reputation throughout the entire league. A lot of people thought he was not going to make it into next season. But he didn't go out and try to spend a bunch of money on a bunch of super proven guys who are going to make this team better immediately and prop them into even if it was a short term, prop them into a playoff situation right now so that he could look better. I think a lot of GMs in that circumstance would do it. He kind of kept to his philosophy as far as young veterans. So he switched philosophies as far as he was not necessarily sticking with his guys and those guys he'd brought in before, but he did stick with the young veteran thing, which means that they have time to grow into it. And I'm curious to what you think as far as just like he didn't go out and go get like the best player on the market with a max contract. He kind of picked and chose around and ended up with a couple guys who do some things well, but it's really an unknown as to whether or not they'll be ready this year to kind of maximize that potential together.
Yeah, it would have been really hard for them to go out and get that guy. I mean, for one, I don't know who the guy is who was out there that they could have gotten. Like Chandler Parsons maybe is a guy who, if they had maxed out, would have helped them, and maybe he's the high-level guy that you could have looked at. There weren't that many of them out there. And I just I don't know that they could have done it. It would have been really hard to go out and say the one thing we're going to do is max out Chandler Parsons, and then we're going to have a core of Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday, Chandler Parsons, and then we're going to fill out the rest of it with kind of minimum type guys. They could have still gotten Terrence Jones and brought back Alonzo G. But I don't know that that's I don't know that that was a feasible plan. Even if that was his inclination, I just don't think it would have worked. I don't think they could have done it. And I do think, You know, I've said before, I'm conflicted about how to feel about the Danny Ferry thing, because out in Vegas, everybody was telling me this is a Danny Ferry team. He's building a Danny Ferry roster. And the thing I'm uncomfortable with that is, like, I don't like the idea that we just pile all the blame on Dell Demps when something goes wrong. And then when they have this sort of intriguing offseason that's against the grain a little, and it seems like, okay, it's risky, but, you know, it's interesting that we say, well, that was all Danny Ferry. That was a different guy. That sort of bothers me, you know, that just yeah. that concept. It could be true for all I know, but on the surface, it bothers me to say it that way. So I don't know, but I think the idea of them going out and getting that one big star player was almost impossible, just because they really didn't have the flexibility to do it. That guy wasn't out there, and they just couldn't have done anything else.
Yeah, I guess they're painted into a corner a little bit that way, but they still, there might have been, I mean, I really don't remember at this point exactly who was out where right now, but it seems like they could have gone, and maybe even via trade, you know, could have given up a first round, they could have traded Buddy Hield, you know, before the draft. They could have done things to get themselves more veteran and ready for this year to be a playoff team right now than what they did, which is seems more stable over the long term. And for a guy in the last year, basically, of him trying to prove that he can, you know, build this franchise the right way, I think that was, you know, noble to a degree, that he's not shifting his philosophy greatly to try to cash in and win this second. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm overstating that, but it just, do you kind of see where I'm going?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in fact, I talked to somebody shortly after the season might not have even been over, who was, you know, a really smart basketball person who knows the NBA very, very well and knows their situation very, very well, and said that would be the question sort of the offseason, is you've got a guy who is fighting for his job. You essentially, he can't, you know, he can't have a bad year, fire the coach, and start over again. You know, this,
no.
They're all in now. If to borrow a phrase that Tim Bontemps kept using the other day, if it goes sideways on him, he's taking the fall. Everybody over there is taking the fall, most likely. I'm not going to say that definitively. They could have another crazy injury year. Any number of things could happen. But most likely, if this thing goes badly, it's a house cleaning situation. And so what somebody told me was, this is the great question of the offseason, is will they do the smart thing, or will they make a real play to save their jobs over there? And I think they did the smart. It's conservative, but it's the smart thing. I mean, I think they did the thing that sets them up the best for the long term by not signing. They didn't sign terrible contracts. I mean, you can argue that guys got overpaid, but you could argue that about literally every guy who signed this offseason, except maybe Terrence Jones, and, you know, a few guys here and there. Maybe Deion Waiters didn't get overpaid. You know, like the number of guys who you couldn't argue that at all is pretty small. So, but I think they're fairly tradable contracts if down the road that's something you need to do. I you're right in the sense that I don't think they made a big reach to try to save themselves. Now, if they could trade a bunch of stuff for Greg Monroe tomorrow, and we're wrong. But at this point, they haven't done that.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's always fluid. I don't expect anything to happen as far as personnel for a little bit here. But at the same time, you know, there are always teams looking to make moves, and anybody who's willing to take Omar Asik's contract at this point, I'm pretty confident they would like take anything back right now. I mean, they would take like a week old fish right now for Omar Asik's contract. So it's still possible, but generally, you look at how this got built, and you see a foundation, and you see what they're looking to do. And I believe if you look in the past, you could say that, and then you could poke holes through it really easily. Like, you'd be like, yeah, you know, you've got these scoring wings, and you've got Anthony Davis running up and down, and you've got, and it's like, yeah, but you can't stop anyone. It's like, that's, you're not, and the finishing five they had, I mean, was incapable of stopping anyone, unless the team just missed a wide open shot, pretty much.
Yeah.
That will be different.
If you had a guy who had the ball in his hands a lot and you could stick Drew Holiday on him, they did okay in those situations, because Holiday's good on the ball. I mean, he's, you know, that's the thing. But outside of that, they just had so many struggles defensively. They were just, and he's not enough. He's not such an elite defender that he, you know, he elevates everything else. He's just pretty good on the ball.
Yeah, I mean, is Etuan Moore going to be in that finishing five?
I don't know. I mean, I still think that five is so interesting, because to me, like, This happens all the time in discussions. This happened the other day with Tim Bontemps. This happened a million times. We talk about all the stuff they did in the offseason. We basically don't talk about Terrence Jones, who I think is the guy who swings a lot of stuff. I mean, it just depends on how good he is. Is he good enough? He doesn't dictate Etuan Moore. Buddy Hield dictates Etuan Moore. But what I mean by like the whole finishing five is like, is Terrence Jones good enough to be in it? 2 years ago, Terrence Jones is absolutely good enough to be in their finishing five. That guy's a better player than a lot of their players. Last year's Terrence Jones is barely good enough to be in their five at like the second quarter, you know?
Yeah.
So what is he is going to dictate a lot of things. And then what is Buddy Hield? Because I would expect, you know, I mean, look, I'm going to go out on a huge limb here. I expect Buddy Hield's going to be bad defensively this year. I mean, maybe not for career, but
yeah, not pulling that out of thin air.
Yeah, right. He's not going to be a good defender this year. I mean, if he is, kudos to Buddy Hield and the famous work ethic, because he's really made incredible strides if he's a good defender. But I would expect he's going to be a minus defender this year. I do kind of have a feeling that he's going to start. I've always had that feeling that they're going to put him in the starting lineup, you know, from day one. As long as he's not just terrible in camp. I think as long as he's good in camp, he's probably going to start. But I think Etuan Moore is probably a good bet. If he shoots the ball the way he did last year, which, by the way, he may or may not do. It was his best year shooting, and on the one hand, you want to say he's never going to do that again. He's not going to shoot, you know, 45% or whatever from three. On the other hand, you know, he should get open looks here, and as Solomon Hill said, Alvin Gentry likes to point guys out, you know, likes to point out to guys, here's the percentages of guys before they played in this system, and here's the percentages when they played in it, and it often takes a big jump, and so maybe he'll shoot something like that. If he's a reliable three-point shooter and he's a really good defender, I think there's a pretty good chance that it's Holiday, Moore, Hill, Davis, and to be determined, maybe?
Yeah, I guess that's the – do you start with Etuan – and these are just like little rapid-fire whatever
sure,
thoughts.
Yeah.
Do you bring Moore and Galloway off the bench together, like to start the second quarter? Do you need Frazier to be out there with them? Can you play all three at the same time? I don't know how that lineup works. Is Quincy Pondexter in that group? Because then you're really small.
Yeah.
If you have all those guys, and that's, you know, in the second quarter, so you could still be facing a relatively big lineup, and they're not terribly fast, with the exception of Frazier. It's a complicated mishmash of when to put guys in, and I guess you could always sort of rotate and shorten minutes, you know, here and there to get different combinations on the floor. But, you know, if you're thinking about it in a static, you know, first team, second team, which you see relatively often in the NBA, you know, how do you even get Moore, Galloway, Pondexter, and Frazier all on the court at the same time?
Yeah, it's really tricky. And I mean, like, when we talk about this, I mean, are you assuming Cunningham starts? Is that your?
I suppose
not.
Osick starts.
Yeah, Osick starts, and Davis starts at power forward. That's actually how I've always thought they're going to start. And so you start Hill at small forward, and then you're going to start Hill and Holiday most likely. That seems most likely. So yeah, then you're
that's,
coming in.
I
with,
think that's yeah.
So, I mean, some guys are going to get squeezed out. Remember, they got 15 guys. They've got effectively their roster. And I think what's going to happen, at least early to me, Alonzo G's not going to play, who obviously was a guy that played a ton last year, but who was asked to do too much. He should not have been playing as much as he was last year. And then Ajensa's not going to play much. I don't see where those minutes are.
Yeah, I think he's going to get traded. I think somebody's going to say they want a big who can score coming off the bench, and they're going to trade for him because his contract's pretty good, and he is just – I can't handle watching him play. I'm not even like a fan or a coach or anything like that. I literally I cringe watching him play. It makes me crazy. he's everything about an NBA player that makes me nuts, in that he's 7'2", he's huge, he's got all this skill. And for whatever reason, it's like he plays like he's 5'8 half the time. And I just don't understand it. And there's nothing they can do to really break him out of that. They've tried for 2 years. And maybe I'm overstating it, but I find it to be relatively baffling when I watch him play.
No, I don't disagree with you. He doesn't, you know, from sitting next to me at games, he does not have the most of my ire from that team last year, but the guy who I really could not stand watching will not be back. So that's Norris Cole was the guy who I could not abide. I just had those days, you know, those nights where it was just, there were nights I can remember turning, like Norris Cole would make his first shot, and I can just remember looking at you like, here it goes.
Yeah. Ready for some pull-up jumpers.
Yeah. That's.
Is he going to sign a contract? Is he going to be in the NBA?
I don't know. It's kind of weird that he's gotten to this point and we haven't heard anything. I mean, it's not that weird because, I mean, we saw him play, but like to not be anywhere at this point is surprising. It's surprising that he hasn't found any place, you know. And maybe
he waited until like October. I want to feel like last year until he opted in. I mean, it was literally
really
like
late.
Day before training camp.
It was after I moved here, and I didn't move here till like September. I moved here on September 15th of last year, and I don't think he was in yet. So I think that still was. I think that was yet to happen. I believe, or it had just happened. Like one of those two.
It was very late. He was definitely the last like significant contributor that joined on. And I don't know what he was waiting for. I guess he was trying to see if he could get a better deal. There's all sorts of leaked stuff about him signing with Utah or something last year. I mean, I haven't read his name anywhere except for now in the list of, like, who's still out there? And it's like Norris Cole's like the third best point guard that's still out there. I just, you know, we don't need to talk about Norris Cole, but
no,
just generally, like,
no. But he came up in a conversation the other day, and I did a Google News search just to be like, well, did I miss something? Like, did he? And no, you can't find his name.
Yeah, and it's not like the Pelicans traded anything for him. I mean, it was kind of a, you know, the throwing scraps at each other, give Miami some space type of deal. And then, you know, he came off the bench. It's not like he was a critical piece.
He wasn't bad that first year. You know, the year that they got into the playoffs, he was fine.
He very much helped them win that San Antonio game in game 82, which was a huge game for this franchise. And he had he had probably the best game of his Pelicans tenure. I think he scored like 18 points in the, you know, in like 20 minutes. He was unbelievable. And that alone is probably worth his signing.
Yeah.
But watching and sitting next to Brett Dawson while he was playing last year really made it worth it for
that
me.
That too. By the way, no offense to Norris Cole, who I very much enjoy talking to. I just don't
like
watching
nice
him play.
Nice guy. Yeah.
Don't like watching him play at all. Just really don't like it.
Same with Lexi. Really nice guy. Really don't like
watching
him play.
Also very nice. Yeah. Great guy. Not a big fan of his game, but, you know, it's I was always, the first time I ever saw him, I was actually just, I bought a ticket to a Pacers game and he played. And I think Davis was hurt or just didn't play well. And they played Ajensa quite a bit. Ajensa looked pretty good. And I had basically never heard of him. And I thought, well, that's a nice piece. But, you know, he's basically the same guy he was then. It was like a 7'2 guy who can make jumpers.
And he had games 2 years ago when AD was hurt where I think he scored like 20 points against Brooklyn in a win and like 18 against Toronto in a win. It was like he had like a couple really nice games. Everyone's like, oh man, look at this guy. And it's like he doesn't do anything that you want a center to do.
Even
like
this
especially
year,
a backup center.
This year at the end of the year when everybody was hurt and people you just had to have somebody score. I mean, he could score. He had games.
Yeah, it's just not what you need.
Yeah.
You don't need him shooting from 16 feet out and him like taking baby hooks. It's like that's the last thing this team needs is another like someone to take shots.
But I agree with you. I don't think he's untradeable. His contract isn't great, but it's not terrible, especially now. It's not terrible. I think he's a guy who you might have to attach somebody else if there was something somebody else wanted. You know, you might need to throw in another piece, but I think it could be you could work something out. What if somebody really wanted Cunningham and was willing to take Ajensa?
Yeah, I think I really do think they could deal Ajensa on his own though, because that contract is so, especially because there's three more years left on it at $5 million apiece. I mean, that's almost nothing.
I'm not suggesting they should trade really Cunningham, by the way. Unless Terrence Jones is really good and somebody really wants him, and then maybe
and then he doesn't have a spot.
I think you got to get into camp and see Terrence Jones before you talk about that big talk.
Sure. And before we go to weekly podcasts here, we have to at least talk about Tyreke Evans, right?
That has to come up for like the 50th
time.
So, you know, it's funny. I did the Tyreke Evans podcast where I said every time I talk to somebody, I hear something different. And then I talked to somebody who said, everything you hear, there's some truth in every bit of it. And this week, I heard a little bit of, not at all from inside the Pelicans. I want to make that very, very clear. But just in talking to some people who know the league a little bit, I heard some optimism about his health. So some long-term optimism about his knee. Now, I still don't expect that he's going to be, as Alvin Gentry said, ready for the start of the season. I don't think that's going to happen. But I think the long-term prognosis, at least some people think, is pretty good. And that's good to hear, because the one thing that I heard in Vegas that was alarming was just that there were teams who wondered if he would ever play again. And he's like 27 years old or whatever. You know, you don't want that to be the case.
No. And, you know, my scientific research, really been digging into sources. His Instagram pictures have gone from him standing next to Bentleys to him working out. So it's really a good sign for the Pelicans going forward. He's in the gym now in the Instagram pictures. It's very important. I think we know he's at least he has weights around him.
And we don't know yet. That's the one thing about, you know, I've seen some of the stuff from his Instagram, and we haven't seen him run full speed, as far as I know. I haven't looked at his Instagram in the last couple of days. I'm not a huge Instagram user, but we haven't seen him run full court. We haven't seen him cut. We haven't seen him do the things you got to do to be a healthy basketball player. And so I tend to think that Alvin Gentry knows if he's saying that he's not going to be ready for the start of the season. But whereas I think there was some talk in the office, certainly there was some talk in Vegas that people just didn't know if he would play this year. I get a sense of optimism about the idea that he will be able to play at some point. Maybe not to start at the beginning, but I think there's some optimism about him long term.
I do question who knows any of this stuff, though. It's not as if he's with team doctors right now.
Yeah.
It's not as if he's with really anybody. I mean, he's been all over the world, and he's kind of been like, I don't know where the news circulates from. I swear I think some of it circulates from Instagram, and I'm just going to stand by that fact until I hear otherwise.
you want me to make a couple of podcast listeners really mad right now?
Oh, please, God.
I'll tell you when we're done here. I'll tell you where some of the news is coming from when we're finished here. Sorry, everybody.
Well,
sorry, there are rules here. I can't. There are things I can't say. I'm sorry. I have always been very open on the podcast about giving you a little bit of inside baseball. And there are just things that I hear that I can't repeat because I cannot totally attest to the validity of them. And so I'm not going to put them out there into the world, but I'll tell Scott.
Fair enough. I'll tell you all. Don't worry.
Yeah. You stay quiet, mister. You keep that quiet.
But I mean, do you think he will play for the Pelicans this year? Or do you, I mean, it seems to be, even if he was healthy, that he would be like the first thing they would try to trade, right?
Yeah. I here's my thought. If he's healthy at some point, I do think he's going to play. I think he's going to see at some point, he's going to see some significant minutes because they're going to have to see what he is. Not only to decide whether they can play him out the stretch this season and use him, but they have to give him trade value, and he's going to have to play to get it. I mean, people have to see him play, right?
Sure. I guess you have to display him, but not if you're basically going to give him away.
That's true.
And maybe you don't have to. I mean, people know who he is.
Yeah,
you know,
people need to see that he can walk. People need to see that he can get up and down the floor. You know, they got to see that because like most teams – I think from what even my understanding on Milwaukee is that they don't want him if he just can't do anything, you know, like and that's as much, I think with Milwaukee as an example of a team that I know they've talked to, like, I think Milwaukee, it's as much the look of it as anything else. The optics, as it were, I hate that phrase, of taking a guy like, for example, trading Greg Monroe, if they were doing that and taking on a guy who just doesn't do anything, just can't even play. I don't know if they care, but they might care about how their fans feel about something like that. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I've been told they maybe don't want to get absolutely nothing in return. So,
yeah, and they haven't crossed the Rubicon to where they're going to waive him anymore, which is kind of something we were thinking about a month ago.
Or stretch him.
That doesn't seem likely anymore.
Yeah, the stretching thing was, I think I talked about this on the podcast. If not, I'll talk about it right now. But I think the thing with the stretching thing, talking to some people around the league, if there was a player who they could get in free agency as a result of stretching him, they probably would have done it. If there's a guy out there and you say, okay, the X number of million, it was only like $3 million that you could create in cap space with Tyreek Evans by stretching him this year. If there was a player you really wanted and you thought you could get him, and you had to do that to do it, there's a chance they would have done it. But that guy did not exist. He just wasn't out there.
Sure. Yeah, and that's the only way it would make sense. You don't need to do it for cap space any other reason, unless there was someone who was really there, or if there's a trade that you really feel like you need to make, and you need that little bit of cap room. But otherwise, I mean, they don't need him out of the locker room that badly or anything like that.
No,
he's not, like we've said, he's not a cancer. He's not I don't think he's not gathering the whole team together to hang out on, you know, at the bowling alley when they go on the road or anything.
Right, but he's also not like gathering them together to undermine Alvin Gentry. He's not like, you know, that's not who he is. He's just kind of quiet. I mean, he's just not like a guy that's going to be – he's just a guy, frankly, who doesn't fit the system they're running now offensively and doesn't fit in their long-term plans. I mean, that's just it. I don't think it's personal.
I think you've wrapped that up nicely.
Yeah. So there's not going to be, as I said, there's not going to be a whole lot between now and August. There won't be a lot that happen, or between now and September. There will be a schedule at some point. The schedule will come out. It won't be, you know, the, I mean, look, they're not going to London, and they probably aren't going to play on Christmas again. Who knows? I mean, weird things happen. But it's not going to be, there won't be huge, huge news in that schedule. As you've said, we know who they're going to play. Like, there's, you know, they're going to play 82 games. We know exactly who they're going to play and how many times. So it's not really a huge deal in that sense. But is there anything between now and September 15th or 20th, or, you know, when we get to the point where camp is close and there's a lot of storylines to talk about, anything between now and then that you're interested in seeing what happens?
I am looking for some more of those underground video of Anthony Davis like we had last offseason, like right around early September. Because remember when we saw like the in the dark gym him shooting threes with Darren Erman and Kevin Anderson there, if they or Kevin Hansen I should say, they if that starts to emerge, I think that's a really good sign for the Pelicans. That he's working out full blast.
That is the only answer. Is what is going on with Anthony Davis? That's like the thing between now and September is like whatever update we get on Anthony Davis, I think is. It's obviously significant because you want to – he's supposed to – sometime next month, and August is – I mean, next month is a couple days away now, but he's supposed to resume basketball activities. He'll have a ball. He'll be able to do some things. And so, yeah, I think whatever glimpse of that we get is the real story of August.
And I want to see it. We're going to talk – I mean, both of us will talk to people inside, outside the organization who are going to tell you things. And I really – when it comes to health stuff, I just – simply don't believe it until I see it.
Absolutely.
And so I really do want to see some of those, you know, kind of little video. And he's, you know, been known to post them and he's been known to show it off. So I'm hopeful he does. And I'm hopeful we kind of get a gauge of him shooting, him running, him dribbling, him doing all the basketball things that we haven't seen him do since March.
Yeah. Let's see an Anthony Davis dunk. You know, let's make sure he can still dunk.
Yeah, I got it. If he can't dunk, this is going to be a long year.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. I watched a YouTube video the other day of all his dunks from this season. It's a lot of dunks.
He gets up there.
That was a lot of work. Props to whoever made that YouTube video. That's a lot of editing.
God, could you imagine him playing with Chris Paul? Like if they would have been on the Olympic team together at any point,
I watched it in Toronto this year. I did.
That wasn't a real game. That was
think he would dunk every single trip down the floor if he played with Chris Paul?
It would just be like I just remember Tyson Chandler and the just watching that every game, being like, oh my god, like this guy is the perfect lob expert I've ever seen. And it just seems like he would fit so well with someone like Anthony Davis. I mean, he fits very well with where he is now, Chris Paul.
Yes.
But, if Drew Holiday had anywhere near that ability of on the lob, it would really be something else.
Yeah. By the way, it's not like DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin don't dunk. So that does work out all right for Chris.
Yeah, it works fine for Chris Paul. It works out less fine for Anthony Davis than not having Chris Paul.
We saw some signs of that, not to that extent at all. That's something that, I think those guys have a nice little chemistry, he and Drew Holiday, and it will be nice if Holiday is healthy and does not have a minutes restriction, and you can see them on the floor together a little bit more by the fact that
they'll starting probably Drew Holiday
both
will help.
Start. Yeah, exactly. So you might see a little more of that. The whole reason that's on my brain is that I just did watch that video, and you don't see a ton of those. But as you remember, the game I missed because I was sick, the Charlotte game, they basically won on a play like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they have the ability to do it. I just don't know. It's definitely not Drew Holiday's like biggest strength. It's one of Chris Paul's best passes is the lob.
Absolutely.
He's like amazing at it. And the timing is as important as the placement. And they've got to have more, you know, role plays where he's able to kind of get behind the defense and make plays like that. And I don't know how much of that is in Alvin Gentry's system, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see just how different the offense is in terms of, you know, you sort of touched on this earlier, but I've said this before, that they have built a team, I think, that is designed to never have Alvin Gentry walk out after a game and say, well, in the fourth quarter, we just didn't get AD the ball, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that should not happen ever again with this group. There's no one who is going to command the ball that much in this. And I guess, you know, you could technically see Drew Holiday trying to do it himself. He did take a lot of pull-up jumpers last year. Some of that was by necessity, playing with the bench. But at the same time, there really should not be an issue of we can't get AD the ball. I could see the issue of, hey, AD's getting the ball, getting triple teamed.
Yeah, exactly. That's the question.
That's more of a problem.
Yeah, so I was going to say the flip side of that, I guess, is that you could be in a situation where you say, well, we couldn't get AD the ball because there were three guys on him and they just dared everybody else on the floor to beat him offensively.
Yeah, and that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's and the question. His biggest development question, besides health, is can he pass out of that successfully?
Yep. And how? And also, it's just going to be how good these guys are. You know, you've got, for example, as I said, Etuan Moore had a career year shooting the three. Solomon Hill actually had one of his best years and had a great playoff series. How well do those guys shoot it? And how good is Buddy Hield? I mean, that's like you can't count on Buddy Hield to be really good this year, but it would really help. I mean, it makes a huge difference for Anthony Davis.
And if he struggles in the first 2 months, they could always go out and trade for Anthony Morrow or someone like that who really is a very one-dimensional three-point shooter that they can just stick out, you know, basically try to fill that Ryan Anderson role of someone to stick out there in the last couple minutes of the game just to make threes so that Anthony Davis does not get triple teamed.
That's true. That stuff too, that the whether they make some sort of tweaks personnel-wise, I think will be a really interesting storyline, but we'll have so much time to talk about that. You know, that's right now we're focused on this summer, and we're basically done with it. The summer's pretty much over. The NBA summer, the summer continues. I can tell by stepping outside. It's still very much summer in New Orleans, but I think we've encapsulated the off season pretty well. I think we've looked ahead. I think this is a nice way to leave the listeners as I finish up this daily schedule.
Yeah. Well, now we have to finish with, you know, who are the punt gunners you think going to be? And that's, you know, we gotta really dig into that Saints preseason whenever they get those first couple preseason games. Got to really, really dig in on that depth chart there.
I think Alonzo G is going to be there. He's going to have two-way star.
He is a punt gunner. I've never seen one.
He's going to play both sports. He's going to be like Deion Sanders. He won't have to take like a helicopter. He can just walk across the street. It's going to be great.
Paycheck's the same, you know? You're same franchise.
He went to Alabama. He probably knows how to play football by osmosis. That's my theory. I'm sticking to it.
Hey, I'm just, you know, I'll be reading Saints updates for every day on Twitter.
That's
for the
right.
Next,
and you'll be subscribing to Locked On Saints, part of the Locked
On Saints. And I already subscribed to Locked On Saints because Nick Underhill is the best reporter in New Orleans when it comes to covering football.
He is. I keep joking about Locked On Saints. It's really good, and people should totally listen to it. If you like the Saints, you are really missing out if you're not listening to it. It's really fun.
The data alone is just incredible.
It's great.
Absolutely incredible what he's able to pull out of things that in the past, like I've covered, you know, many football practices, you know, for college and whatever. And, you know, you watch and you say, oh, yeah, this guy looked good. This guy looked good. Like I never had any like real data behind it. And he's created it. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's great. It's really, really good. So, Scott, you will be back here at some point during the monthly schedule. Who knows what we might talk about when we shift to the monthly thing. You were talking the other day. Maybe we'll just talk about food one day. We might just have a restaurant podcast.
I'm in. Right. I'm in. That's all I'm doing this summer, just going to restaurants to remember why I live here, because it's like 1,000 degrees.
And maybe a Tulane fall ball baseball podcast.
No. Really need to recap that middle bullpen. It really struggles in the middle innings there.
I promise we won't do that. Please keep listening to this podcast.
Right. We'll have Chandler and I going back and forth on the bullpens of Tulane and LSU.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to call Chandler. I'm going to start calling Nick All 22, and I'm going to call Chandler fall ball. That's his... his new nickname. All right, Scott, thanks so much. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you very soon.
Anytime, Brett. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. So I hope you enjoyed listening to that like half as much as Scott and I enjoyed doing it because we had a good time with that one. That's going to be a really good place to leave it, I think, as we wrap up this daily schedule. Starting next week for about 6 weeks or so, one podcast a week, occasionally two if there are topics that merit that. When the podcast is only once a week, you can expect more often than not that's going to be on Thursday, maybe Friday. But I'm like a lot of the NBA, I am driven by analytics. And the analytics tell me that you guys overwhelmingly listen to this podcast on Thursday and Friday more than any other day of the week, really almost regardless of guest. It's just even when you go back and listen to old episodes, Thursdays and Fridays are the huge days. So probably by maybe Wednesday night, Thursday morning is when you can expect those to be up. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at @BDawsonWrites or the show at Locked On Pels. And that is where you're going to get updates on when the show posts. So we'll probably be guest heavy. We'll come up with some topics to talk about, and we'll find things we can discuss all summer long, at least once a week. So I will be here doing that. I hope you'll be here too.